Hello and welcome to the Dad Podcast. I'm your host, Justin Worsham. With me today is a good friend of mine, Jane Wells.
Woo-hoo! Back yet again.
If you want to find Jane Wells, her first episode, episode 266 from June of 2017, if you want to go back and take a listen, if you are a new listener to the show, thank you again for coming back.
My pleasure.
I'm super stoked to talk to you about... two things. Number one, because you're Jane Wells, you have found an awesome New York Times
article. Wait, first.
Yeah.
Did you go to Red Lobster for Valentine's Day?
No. I made.
Damn.
I got to be honest. I made a lot of mistakes on Valentine's Day. I got to be honest. A lot of mistakes were made. I came home. You actually saw my sons playing video games, which I think is the only thing they ever do when you're here, which
is fine.
Yeah,
but at least they jump while they do it.
That's right. They're doing cardio while they're doing it. But my older son is behind in some of his work in school. He's in it's very pretentious, I think. I was a gate kid.
Yeah.
And I didn't like being a gate kid. He obviously likes it and should, right?
I think gate's overrated, but go ahead.
Well, I also
think AP classes in high school are overrated.
That was my whole thing.
And college is overrated. But anyhow, back to gate.
I wish I had a drop with the USC fight song.
Well, my college is the exception.
But anyway, my wife and I were kind of talking about it, and we did a pre-Valentine's Day dinner so it wouldn't be so rushed. And so we're going out, I felt very calm conversation where I said, I go, you know what? They play, as long as their work is done, they can play video games during the week after school, right? And she comes out and works in the office in the back. And so it's a great kind of babysitter, you know, to say that we don't have interaction with our kids would be a gross injustice to us. Like we have the dinner time and all that stuff. But anyway, point is, I said, you know what? I think we got to knock off the video games, you know, for Monday through Friday, because my son was supposed to be doing these assignments. And whatever he doesn't get done in a school day, the teacher kind of says, because he's in a gate class, it's like, the onus is on you, man. You get it done.
Yeah.
Even though he's only in third grade. And I like that.
Right.
I feel like there isn't really a lot. I would venture to say that there's nothing a kid couldn't necessarily handle as far as expectation, right?
I mean, back in the day, 8 years old, 9 years old, they're out in the field.
Yes.
You know, I mean, it's like you got chores in the morning, you study for a little bit, yes. Chores in the afternoon, it's on you.
I beat the story to death, but because it was just so jaw-dropping, is that my grandfather was farming 180 acres of cotton with his older brother when they were 9 and 5.
Yeah.
I mean, come on.
That is extraordinary.
Right? I mean, and not just like, I mean, I'm talking Great Depression era farming. I mean, we're talking knife plow with a couple of mules,
right.
No tractors, no nothing. Just a 9 and a 5 year old, you know, farming cotton.
And they
in
lived
Texas.
To be 125.
Right, well, 81, but still.
No, I mean, it wasn't. That's not the ideal life. But yeah, no, kids can handle responsibility.
Yes. And so anyway, so I said no games Monday to Friday because he's got to get caught up on these assignments. So I come home from work on Valentine's Day.
Uh-oh.
And I'd made clear. I said, would you like me to make you dinner? I got to work. I go, but I could get you the lobster. She goes, no, honestly, I'm good. I don't want it. Which I think is another test I failed. I at least got, she likes chocolate covered strawberries. So I do the Sherry's berries. That's been a move of mine the last 2-3 years.
Always a good move.
And then, but what pisses me off is I get the Sherry's berries and then the kids eat half of them. And so now I buy extra chocolates for the kids.
Now
I'm getting Valentine's from it. And then she goes and then they get boxes of chocolates for C's for the kids too. Like I don't, it's great.
What do you get?
I get
sex.
No, not this night because because.
Oh wow!
I came in.
Wow!
I came in, Jane, and I saw my kids playing games.
Oh yeah!
And, oh boy, did I come out swinging! I said, "What the hell is going on?
Yeah.
Why are you guys playing video games?" And then they look at me with a kind of like a shocked look of. Not shocked as in I caught them, but because I could see that. Like it was more of a shocked as in, no, this is okay. But they couldn't articulate it fast enough. And I said, are you done with your work? And they go, oh, yeah. And then everything chills out. And I said, and I look at my older son. I go, but are you done with everything? Or you just did a couple assignments today? Because he had 24 assignments he had to get caught up on. And he goes, I did 3. And I said, that's not enough for dad. Sorry, turn it off. Why are you playing games? We talked about this yesterday. And he goes, Mom said it was okay for Valentine's Day. And I said, okay. I said, but I need you to turn it off. And then they kind of go, no, but. And I go, no, but. Turn it off. And they go, but. And I go, turn it off. Like, it just keeps, you know, getting. And they go, but Mom said. Like, now they're elevated, right? And I said,
the old mom said,
I don't think I threw under the bus. I said, well, guess what? Dad's home and I'm right here looking at you saying, get it off and get your ass in your room and get to work now.
And this is like an acid flashback. My husband would come home from a trip. He'd say, my husband, a pilot, on his way out the door, you're punished. No video games for a week. Goodbye, Jane. I'll see you in a week. And then, of course, I would break down, and it would be mom's rules versus dad rules, and I'm about ready to tear my hair out because my son's making my life miserable. I'm like, okay, did you do your work? Yeah, okay, you can play. And then he'd walk in the door, why are you playing? Mom said, well, dad's home now. Wow.
You all right?
And that would be a bad night for me. But it sounds like it was a bad night for you.
Yeah, well, so then I go outside. I go into the room in the back where my wife's office is, and she
Because you can't fight in front of the kids.
No, I do.
Oh.
I do. I have no qualms.
Oh.
We had one of our biggest fights of late was her and I kind of going at it. And we don't fight. We don't fight like Jerry Springer couple
right,
fight, but
right.
we're both very passionate about each other, I think is a fair assessment. And so I don't sugarcoat things when I get frustrated, and neither does she. And so there was a time when we were fighting and the kids were still awake, even though we were supposed to be putting them to bed. And Jacob, the older one, he kind of got, I guess, a little red-eyed, like he was getting upset.
Yeah.
And she kind of like indicated. And I said, I go, what? Like, even this, I couldn't keep her in there. I was like, what? I understand. Like, she was doing a head gesture thing, and I was like a twitch. And I said,
hey.
She goes, well,
the kid's watching.
She goes, I think he's getting upset. And so I just kind of shut down the fight real quick. And I just said, I go, hey, are you upset? And he goes, a little. And I said, why? He goes, well, you and Mom are fighting.
Yeah.
I said, right. I go, but do your mother and I fight all the time? And he goes, no. I said, can you remember another fight that your mom and I had? And he goes, no. I said, okay. I go, but when two people live with each other and they care about each other, part of it is fighting. Like, every once in a while, you're going to disagree. You're going to fight. And I said, your brother and you can't go 5 hours. Do you see me crying whenever you fight with your brother? He goes, no. And then he kind of smiled. I said, so it's fine. I go, but if we don't fight, then we just get angry at each other. And I go, so this is how you work it out. You got to talk it out. You got to say, this is why I'm upset. And then Mom says, well, this is what bothers me. And then go, I didn't know that. But
that's talking it out. And that's saying, this is why I'm upset. That's not fighting.
Well, I say that this is what I was saying when I'm saying this is, that's the subtext of what's going on.
Yeah.
Trust me, we are not a quintessential therapeutic couple.
We always tried to, like, there would be that look across the room, like, back in the bedroom. Stat. Hey, kids, we'll be right back. As if they couldn't figure out what was going on.
Right.
Doors closed, and it's like, I don't appreciate you, undercutting me that way. That was usually his thing. I don't appreciate you undercutting me. Well, I don't appreciate you leaving town for a week and making rules on your way out the door when I have to raise these kids. Oh,
isn't
my
marriage
gosh.
Fun? Marriage and parenting.
Those
is just,
days are so behind now.
You know what's funny is that the listener can't see this, but you did your face flash back to the frustration.
Yeah.
And then I got to see you have the realization of those days being gone.
Like,
and it just lit up and released again.
I mean, we still fight about the kids.
Nuh-uh.
And they're 25 and 27.
How?
We argue about, because why did he message you? He never calls me.
But this is you saying this or
no,
your husband?
No, this is him. Or other time, I feel like he's still too hard on, like, our daughter who put herself through law
school. She's a lawyer.
Who's now deputy attorney general for the state of California, is not living up to her full potential.
Oh, I want to shake your husband's hand.
No, and I'm the one who's always, come on. And there's something about it that even now I just can't say, whatever. I it's like Mama Bear. We'll be in our 80s, God willing, and our children will be 60, and he'll say something, and my back will get up. It's this mama bear thing where it's like, well, you know, you just don't understand. And instead of saying, Jane, let it go.
Yeah.
Let it go.
But it's, see, here's why, this is why I like talking to you about this kind of stuff, is that not only A, have you been through it, but the perception I would say that I have of you is that you're also type A. Like, there's a little bit of, you're a go-getter. You know, you have an entrepreneurial spirit about you. You make your own stuff happen. Like, you know, you don't wait around for anything to come to you. You go get it. And so you would think that you would also have a high bar for your kids, which I think you do, but your husband's bar is just even higher, right? Which is not what you normally would say. I like that the idea of everybody else's bar being just about out of reach, I would imagine, is where Jane Wells's bar already is. And your husband found a way to put a little extension on it. Like, just to...
But that probably says more about our relationship with each other. Like, maybe he knows where my bar is, and it's sort of a passive aggressive way to, like, you know, but she's not meeting her potential, knowing that I don't know. All I know is both of our kids, and I give him most of the credit, though some of it I think is nature is my inner drive in them. Both of them, man, they are off the payroll, on their own, doing great. And I give him a lot of credit, as I said before, because he was in their faces, like you.
Yeah.
As a dad, he did not abdicate his role at all, except for...
I gotta go.
You're punished. I'll be back in a week.
But here's what I've noticed about this same kind of... is that what I told my wife when I came out, and I was yelling at her out here in the back, I go, why are they in there playing... like, this is how it starts... why are in there playing video games? And she go, and then I don't know why she says, well, because it's Valentine's Day. And then I go, Valentine's Day is for couples. What the fuck does that have to do with anything? And then she's like, and then when, I don't know why I'm wired
this
way. Oh, I
know exactly how she felt. She says, oh, because I love them.
Well, she goes, well, they did their work. But it's the idea of you know what? You're right. And then it's but I'm still angry.
Of course you are, because this was what you had agreed to.
Right. And there's other examples in
our parenting.
And
you walk in the door.
Yes.
And it's not what you agreed to.
And so then I said, so then I start going off. I go, I get it. I go, but you got to understand that I was the guy who was here. Right. And so when I was the guy who was here, then it was easy. Because I could be the guy with the expectations and keep everybody, because I go, they need those boundaries. They need consistency. That's what I believe.
Absolutely.
And I said, so I go, and that's why it could work, where you would be the one who was gone at work all day and could come home and be the nice one. I said, but now you're here all the time. I said, so you can't be the nice one and the one who and expect me to come home. I go, because that means when I walk in the door for being gone all the time, I got to kick it up even further to get my point across. Because the only reason they got screamed at in there was all the pushback I was getting. If they would have just said, OK, sorry. Yeah. OK, we'll go do it. Then turn it off. Then I would have been like, OK, great. And moved on. But then so to further ruin my Valentine's Day, there was upset. Like they were very obviously there was crying going on. And so I went into I did the classic dad move of like, why are you crying? Which is, in retrospect, is such a stupid question. I know exactly why.
That's all right. Why are you crying?
Well, yeah. And it would be different if I was like, why are you crying? Which I think is the modern.
Why are you crying?
Yeah, what are you crying about?
What are you crying about? Jeez. There are kids living in war zones.
Exactly. You think they're crying? I mean, yes, kids, but for real reasons. So anyway, so I go to him and I calm him down and she says, well, I think it's my fault. She felt like the whole reason there was this angry, intense atmosphere was her fault.
Well, it kind of was.
Well, I go, here's the thing. I said.
No, you know, no disrespect.
No, there is none. Trust me, I disrespect her far more than anybody else could. But I've earned that right, I feel. But anyway, I go, well, here's the thing. I said, there is still the only reason, like I said, it got heightened is because of all the pushback. That's it.
But from their perspective, this is the class. We've all been kids. Mom said, one parent said yes, and that's all you need.
But they
know. I'm going to go to the mat with that.
But they know. They know. You can't tell me that your kids didn't know that they could get one over on you. But when he walked in, it was an entirely different story. When I put my kid, this is how I know and why I feel no guilt about the difference. Because when I put them to bed every once in a while, like that's her part of the routine. And it's also a carryover from when she was working 8 hours a day and it was her time to bond. So I always made sure they were showered and everything so that she could have more time to chill. They weren't doing something else by the time she got home. So we would have a dinner together as a family. Then we would sit and watch a show. She doesn't like teeth maintenance, so I handled the teeth maintenance. And then she would read them stories and put them to bed. And that
she
was,
had a pretty good deal.
Listen, I'm going to need you to write that down. I need an affidavit.
Anyhow, yes.
So anyway, so she, I lost my train of thought.
Well, you were going to say when it came, your role, something about you. No excuse.
When I put them to bed. Like if she ever had a work dinner that she had to go to where she's, you know, she would dip in and like change clothes and then had to go back out for something. And I would, and I put them to bed. Like when she puts them to bed, it's always like, Mom, there's somebody does that.
Yeah.
At least two or three times. And what I love about it is that the other part that she's always kind of disagreed with my parenting is that she says I yell too much, you know, kind of like, or that I get too aggressive. Right. And but what I love about it is that every time I'm aggressive, it's because they've pushed me to that point, right?
Right.
And it usually yields a result. And it, to me, it kind of goes back to like I talked about it recently on an episode. I think it's coming up next week. But getting spanked or something like that, as much as you could say research is bad or whatever, but all of us that grew up with it, it worked. It was effective.
It worked. And I spanked as well.
Yeah.
I was spanked and I spanked.
And I spanked.
It gets someone's attention.
Yes.
It says no.
Yes.
In the most quickest, most effective way. Now, they get to a certain, you can't do that anymore. That's right. When you say no video games.
Right.
That's effective. Then it's
right.
No phone, no car, no social media.
Absolutely. And so what I did, whenever I put them to bed, though, no questions. And I do, maybe in my wife's defense, I just say, I go, listen, now's your time. Whatever you got. Because when I shut this door, that's it. It's lights out, man. Anything? Nope. I said, you got your water. You went to the bathroom. We're good, right?
We've been at this all day.
Yeah.
You've had all day to ask me the question. Yes,
exactly. So I shut the door and I get it, especially for the older one. His mind, I can relate to his mind kind of goes. And so whenever he's not distracted by something and it's just his mind, like it'll run off on him. And then he has all these ideas and worries and blah, blah, blah. So I say, nope, lights out. And they've tried in the past where they dip the toe out to cross the line. And I just cut it off. I cut the tie.
Well, you have to be consistent.
Right. And I say, no, get your ass in bed. It's time for bed. That's how it works. And never, never fails. No questions. No nothing. They just go to sleep. And she would, in the beginning, she would come home. She'd go, did they go to sleep all right? You know, because she's used to, all right, here you go. I married you two or three stories. And I'll read them too. But I'll read like two or three stories, whatever her normal is. And then they'll ask for another one. I go, nope. And I just put it away. And she goes, all right. And then she goes in to start her bedtime kind of routine where she's got to take her face off. And, you know, and then they've got a time so perfect, these kids. She will wash her face, right? And sometimes if they're feeling really frisky, that's when they start. So then you got the faucet going. And then she can't hear them
Mom,
over the faucet. Yeah.
Mom.
Yeah, the faint Mom. And if she can't hear them, I say, go to bed. And most of the time she doesn't even know I've done it. But every once in a while, my favorite moment is when she's going to the bathroom. And then you hear the, Mom. And now she's held captive by the toilet. Can't get up right away. And then she kind of sits there. And I know she's in
That's
there.
That's a visual right? That'll stick. I'm stuck with now.
Yeah, yeah, you met my wife today. I'm sorry. Yeah. But
gorgeous, by the way.
Thank you. I did well. I did all right. I outkicked my coverage, as we say. but anyway, I imagine her in there, and with what every mom has to go through this at some point, especially if you're the primary caregiver, where you're just your head in your hands and you just say to yourself, can I just take a piss?
Right.
In some peace and quiet, just 30 seconds to
take
a
leak.
That's
the old Calgon take me away exactly. Moment where it's like, you know, I'm pinching a loaf.
Yeah.
And I'm only halfway.
You know, I didn't think of that. I wonder if she's dropping a deuce, if that's what she really gets aggravated. Because then she'll just yell, I'm going to the bathroom! Give me 5 seconds! Come on! And that just tickles me. I don't know why, but I love that family dynamic. To me, I feel like that kind of passionate family dynamic makes for interesting people.
And you will miss. You will miss.
Really?
And not miss. But miss that. Mom? Dad? You will miss on a quiet evening. Oh, I'm going to get all emotional now.
Really?
Miss and not miss.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
But you'll look back on that and say, why did I not embrace that more? You know, those little voices, when they still want you.
But so where does it come from? Where does it come from? I guess you just said it. When they still, because it's interesting is that I think the not miss part you're describing as somebody who's kind of in the throes of it and been through the younger ages recently is that you don't want to go through that torment, right?
No.
But there is, for the same reason as, I guess, training for a marathon or, you know what I mean? Like any kind of obstacle you overcome in life, you get that little charge of confidence and if you feel good about it, right? So for the same, remembering all of those struggles, I think it's why hard times, even in a marriage, make you stronger.
Right.
You know what I mean? If everything's cake and easy, you've never really been tested. But if,
yeah, you're not really married. That, I don't know what that is. People tell me, oh, I'm living a Cinderella story. I'm like, all right, well, they're divorced in a year. Because nobody's living a Cinderella 13 story.
13 months tops. but right, like it's got to be those. But what I'm saying is, it's you hate them when they're happening. I never really get angry when you deal with the puking in the middle of the night. That kind of stuff. It doesn't anger me, but the lack of sleep and then the constant, like, where you
there's
want
always
something,
there's just always
something,
always.
And then does it just click off when the second one goes away?
Oh,
is it too
no.
much of a Band-Aid? And then you kind of, because you said
no, everything's a transition.
Okay.
Everything is a transition. You're going to find that where you are and what you love and hate about being a parent is going to be different in 2 years, 4 years. It's just amazing the way God or biology works, that they start to pull away from you. And they don't need you so much, but then you worry about them because they're young and stupid. They're not smart enough yet to know how. And then they have such emotional swings, and you're afraid, like, where they are when they're down. Are they going to be okay? You know, are they too down? You know, a 15-year-old boy who is really down on himself can be something that there were times where I was like, I'm praying, you know. Daughters will do stupid things. I remember my daughter one time. When she was in high school, I think I said this before, but she was she got on the cheerleading team as a freshman at high school, and I didn't like the type of girl she was turning into. She was turning into a mean girl. She
really?
Was so happy that she made the cheerleading team. She's being very judgmental. Of course, she's 14 and then 15.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Worst people on earth are 14, 15-year-old girls. They are the meanest people. And my husband and I made the decision, I'm pulling you out of cheer, which her whole self-worth was wrapped up in this too much. And I pulled her out sophomore year. It's not like you're throwing somebody into rehab or whatever, but she was really, 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 really angry, and she left. She took off. Didn't have a car, but she took off, and we didn't know it for a while. And so those sorts of things where you get into a different place where it's not such a pain in the ass because you got to make them lunch every day, and you got to get their teeth brushed, and you got to get them this and that, and they're needy and this. I'm dad, mom. Then it becomes, oh my God, please live. Please live. Please be okay. Please live. Please live. And then you're like, well, they leave and you're worried. Oh my God, it's 2 o'clock in the morning and they've left home because they're in college and it's Friday night. And are they drunk and is everything okay? And are they going to live? And then now I'll go for, they're 25 and 27, and I will go for a day and not think of them. And they were the ones I thought about.
Yeah, every day. Yeah.
24/7. I would pray. My one prayer in the morning and in the evening is, God, protect my children. And still is. And then occasionally there'll be a night and I forget to pray that prayer. And that is the weirdest feeling, where you're sort of like, now you've got this new phase of your life where you've reconnected in your marriage, doing other things, new interests because you have time, a different phase. I got through the period of, gee, my biological need is over.
Mm.
You know, we are, for whatever reason, biologically, what are we here for? To forward the species, to reproduce. And so then when they're gone, it's like, gee, well, my biological job is done. Then you go through, you know, menopause, which is a whole other thing. Then you're like, wow, I guess you put me in the elephant graveyard now. the good thing about the kids, one good thing about the kids being gone is, you know, you're never going to get, nobody's going to ever walk in on you having sex anymore. The bad thing is, you know, now you have menopause. It's sort of like, well, they can walk in anytime.
Anytime.
Not much happening in here. Sorry. It's not that bad. My poor husband. Although I will say, we were lucky. As far as I know, we were never caught. but the kids never walked in on us. The kids definitely never walked in on us.
Yeah.
We were never caught.
But you see, that's, we never know. That's the thing I worry about now, because I've got 1,100 square feet here. It's not a lot.
Well, you got to be quiet.
Yeah. And sometimes you don't know, you know, sometimes you are aware, right? But sometimes you don't know how quiet you are being or not being. And we've kind of lulled into a false sense of security that they are always in a deep sleep.
Well, they also don't really know what you're doing yet.
No. I mean, I had
the 9-year-old will start figuring it out.
I was shocked that he's never asked any questions about it. And I brought it up, and I figure I'm going to mention it to him now. But when he gets a little bit like 10 or 11, I will kind of force the issue just to kind of. But what I liked about his response was that there was no awkwardness between when I said, I go, hey, you know, if you ever have any questions about sex, you can come to your mom or I. Right. And he was like, oh, yeah. Like, no doubt whatsoever. And I said, okay. Like, and it was almost too quick of an answer, too like, satisfactory. Like,
if I have any.
Yeah, exactly.
But I already know everything.
I got Google Dad, on that Chromebook you got me.
Yeah, Dad, if you got any questions.
I would also like to have that moment. I think that would be a fun moment with my son where he just comes up with a, I don't know, because all of the real names but I don't know what they mean. So I'm sorry if it's a photo. He's like, Dad, when's the last time you tried a rusty trombone? You know what I mean? Like just something that would shock me. A guy who, you know, came up in the world of comedy being offensive.
Oh my gosh,
with a group of people.
Google rusty trombone.
Don't do it.
That sounds rough.
NSFW. I don't know what it is. I just know it's kind of like a go-to term. But anyway, my point is, so I said to him, he goes, oh yeah, I can ask you. And then I said, well, the reason I bring it up is because I would much rather you come and talk to me or your mom with your questions, anything you want to know. Then you talk to your friends at school. I said, that to me is just a better way. I go, I get that you're going to talk about it. And he goes, no. He goes, I couldn't talk about it with my friends.
Oh.
And I said, really? And he goes, yeah. He goes, you bring that up on the playground and they go straight to the principal. And I said, that's
the gate program for you right there. They're virgins till 25.
Exactly.
Poor kid.
But no, I said, I go, is that a rule? And he goes, no. He goes, and this is what I love about my son is that he goes, people are so protective of their kids today that if somebody's just mentioning sex on the playground, he goes, I think they'll just go to a principal. He goes, that you just don't talk about that stuff. And I was like, wow. And I said, well, I kind of said, okay. I said, well, here's the thing. I agree with you. I do think people are very protective and they're very worried about when you start having questions about sex.
I don't know. Come on, people.
I know, right?
Your kids are going to talk about it on the playground and you're going to get, look, come on. Come on.
It's a new school way of,
great because we talked about it on the playground because you didn't talk about it with your parents much. I mean, the way my mother described the act of sex to me was so wrong. It's amazing she had 5 children, but I was so confused and I didn't really know how to follow up. So on the playground is where people set me straight about exactly what you do. I think we want to create this cocoon around our kids.
Yeah, it's got to be somewhere in the middle, right? You want people to not be uptight about the playground talk, but also be progressive enough where they're open to having the conversation with their kids.
Yes. And right? I think you did it exactly right. And I think you have the same sort of relationship as a father where your son could come to you and say, what does rusty trombone mean, Dad? Yeah.
I go, I don't know. Let's Google it, kid. Yeah.
We can learn together.
Although I do have to check his browser history because I had a conversation with his teacher that just made me laugh out loud where she said, you may want to check Jacob's computer. And I said, why is that? She goes, well, I was talking about in the class, she's a very, I don't know how to describe her. Like the parents, there are parents in this new school of thinking that think that she's too open and honest with the kids, but I like it. I love her. And I'm realizing now I've said this out loud. And I think she listens to the podcast, whether or not she's still
listening. Kissing up.
No, I'm not. I wish because I forgot. But I think I like how passionate she is. Now I'm kissing up. She's very passionate about her job. But anyway, point is, she was saying about how she said the FBI can figure things out on a laptop, like somehow. And they go, well, not if you destroy the hard drive, one kid said. And she goes, even if you destroy the hard drive, they can go back and track your keystrokes, like of what you typed into the computer. And she said, and your son goes, really?
Wow, they're talking about this in the, what is it, the fourth grade?
Well, here's the thing. She's unique. I think he's in a third, four gate combo class.
Wow.
But I think she's definitely unique when it comes to, like, when it was the anniversary of 9/11, and she did a whole thing about what happened. And so what that was my first, I was hoping it would be porn. But it was
what
more,
was it?
It was conspiracy theory 9/11 videos is what I caught my son watching.
Geez.
I was putting it away, and he goes, Dad, do you know that jet fuel can't melt steel? And so that the government were the ones that brought down. Yeah. I go, all right, time out.
Yeah.
And I thought, and trust me, the irony of the fact that porn not being a realistic representation of sex and that not being a realistic representation of 9/11 was great for me. I was like, that's
wow. Which would you, I guess I'd rather have the 9/11 conspiracy theories than, you know.
Yeah, less hangups, I think, can come from that kind of thing. Yeah. I would imagine. I don't know.
Yes.
But I have my parents, we had the most open, too open. My therapist Stevens has made comment. Too open a relationship about sex, like as far as jokes and commenting about it and all that kind of stuff.
But
it never bothered me. My like one time my sister, she had a boyfriend over and we were waiting for her to go on a family trip and they were in the house and they go, man, she was cranky this morning. My mom made a comment and I said, I don't know why. She got lucky. And I was like 11 or 10, I think. And my parents look at me and like, how do you know? I said, I could hear him on the couch. And so my mom was like, oh, and my mom to defuse it with a joke, I guess, not even to defuse it, but just to pile on with a joke is a better way of putting it. She goes, well, how do you know it wasn't your dad and I? I said, because your bed squeaks like crazy. They had this squeaky.
Oh, my God.
It was gross, man. It just.
And then they look at each other like.
No, my dad liked it. I think my dad.
Oh, yeah. Hey, kids.
I don't think he liked.
Listen and learn.
Yeah, I don't think he liked rubbing that into it. But I think, as a grown man now, I think the idea of just being able to make a bed creak, I think strokes his ego in some way, shape, or form. I don't know. But again, see, I know way too much about my parents' sex life. Here's the thing. I really want to talk about this article, but I love everything we just talked about. But we got to take a break. Let's figure out. I'm going to spin the prize wheel here. Hold on. My computer. Normally, I will look up at the computer or something like that, but I've spent so much time talking to Jane. Oh, that even the TV turned off.
I'll tell you one other thing while you're figuring it out. The nice thing is now that my children are adults, besides the fact that you develop an adult relationship with them completely and they respect you more, they give great advice. And they start to care. They give great advice. They give good feedback. My daughter gives me honest feedback in a loving way about things I'm doing, which I'll ask for her advice and she gives me good feedback. And she even then that last week, she says, this flu is no joke. Make sure you get a booster. Make sure you get a flu shot. My daughter.
Yeah. She's the one parenting you most.
Yeah. I'm all right. And I used to tell her, look, someday I change your diapers. Someday you're going to have to change mine. And she's like, no, I'm going to pay someone to change your diapers, which gets us into this.
Yeah. Let's do this. Let's talk about that when we come back. But then I'm going to spin it now.
Oh, my God. I'm nervous.
What it is.
Oh, no.
That we will fight. Oh.
Wow.
Oh, boy. This, I think, this could tie in a little bit.
What does it have anything to do with anal sex?
No.
Okay, thank God, because I got nothing to say.
You know what's funny? This is my first co-host of this very show.
I will not discuss butt sex.
I don't know. I have kept that drop and use it occasionally, but this was the perfect time for it to ever be teed up. But that is not one of my segments. What we have here is Before Kids. So we will talk a little bit about, and it kind of ties us all together. We have the things that we miss before having children.
Okay.
All right. So we'll do that when we come back right after this. We all remember what life was like before we received our little blessings. But sometimes it's nice to look back and remember how things were when we were happy. So this is why I like, so recently when I started adding this prize wheel of segments, I had Andy Falco Jimenez on the show, who's a dog trainer, and he came in to talk about how dog training is very similar to parenting, in his opinion, which was great. And he had been divorced a couple times, and so
there you go.
We also have a segment of that I said, why does my wife do this shit, is what we have. And so obviously when we have a woman on, we say, why, like marital pet peeves kind of a thing, right? And it was great because he was divorced, so he had lots of ideas. And so to talk about before kids, I like the idea of doing this with somebody whose kids have since moved out, which is kind of something I also wanted to spend some time. So you were saying right before that, you know, Your daughter will call and give you advice, and you will call and use her as a sounding board.
Yes.
My dad has done that with me a lot, where he'll, but it's interesting. My dad has become more of a, I guess, a best friend, like a close friend than a parent, but there still isn't that element of respect. You know what I mean?
Like, I think that happens. I think you develop that relationship. It depends on the child. And yeah. Our son, you know, he lives overseas and he's not a good communicator. And so we've had to get used to that. You know, we had to get used to the fact that he will call you when he will contact you when he wants to. And it's wonderful when he does. Our daughter is much more reactive and proactive, which is nice.
Do you think then, is there something that you could remember back to your life before you had children, right? And there's something that now you get to do, like, but in the middle,
yeah.
You could not.
Well, hey, let's go away for the weekend. You know, let's drop everything. Spontaneity. And I love it now, especially since my work schedule is more flexible and so is his, that I missed that, let's just go to a movie. You know how it is when you have a kid, especially when you have a little kid. Going to the store is a half hour packing operation, you know, and it's this, that, and you're worried all the time. You're always worried and there's always stuff to do. So it is nice to be able to do that again. When we really finally had an empty nest, that's another thing. It happens gradually. You know, they'll go away to camp for a week or two. I don't know if your son will go to sixth grade.
Booster Club president, I fundraise for, they call it outdoor science school. Yeah. Now it's a science camp for a week in fifth grade.
That's a great, you know, kind of baby step. And then they get into high school and they'll go away on trips or whatever. And then, you know, one moves out and this, when we finally, kids were gone, not coming back except for the occasional visit. I was terrified that I was going to be so lonely in this big quiet house, not big house, but quiet house. And my husband planned the first three weekends getaways as sort of this, let's remember what life was like before.
How smart of this guy.
Oh, the smartest.
Just because you think he did it because how?
He did it for me.
That's what I thought.
He knew
it would be a lot for you.
Right.
So to have a little bit of a distraction would help.
Plus, it was fun for him, you know. Yeah. So we went to San Diego for a weekend. We went up to Paso for wine tasting. And it was.
Was he still working by the time they?
Oh, yeah. He still works. He still works. Okay. But, you know, he made it work.
Yeah.
And it was just a nice way to reconnect, remember what life was like before. Because I would say my biggest regret, I don't know if I said this last time, my biggest piece of advice, I think I did, I would have insisted on date nights because the marriage is the last priority. And if you can survive raising kids and reconnect, it's fantastic, but a lot of marriages can't survive.
If you don't maintain that date night, right? Like if you don't.
It was hard.
I recently did a segment on Gary and Shannon about empty nest syndrome. And one of the biggest things that they talk about is, you know, the kind of depression that they said most moms feel it. But, and a lot of it has to do with the fact that you spend this time kind of working independently raising kids. And if you don't stay connected, then all of a sudden it can happen. It feels sudden. And then you're just sitting there staring at each other and you have this
like,
person.
Like, who are you?
Exactly.
And you've changed.
Yes.
Over the last 20 years or whatever it is. You've changed. So we did not put as much emphasis on maintaining our relationship because we're both working crazy careers and raising kids. And my mom was the third parent helping us do it. I wish we had. Fortunately, we've stuck it out and our marriage is stronger now. I mean, there were some tough times.
Oh, yeah.
There were times where I'm like, I don't know if this is going to work. I don't know if I want to stay with this guy. What am I going to do? All those sorts of things. And I'm sure he felt the same way, but it is nice. And so I recommend that as you transition to an empty nest is proactively start making plans to reconnect.
Even if you're, because here's the thing, I get emails from people a lot where they felt like they can't connect. The biggest ones are when the kids are like in the infant toddler phase. And because usually when that happens, that's also when you're kind of at your brokest.
Yeah.
And so what'll happen is you'll have the person who's home and then they go work at night when the other person comes home. You know what I mean? So you become ships passing in the night.
Absolutely.
So, and they're like, how do I stay connected with somebody because we can't really afford a date night or anything. And to that I say, date night doesn't have to be a movie. It doesn't have to be a dinner out. It has to be time where you set aside and go, I'm going to just talk to you and we're going to make arrangements for the kids to be, we're going to just be people hanging out. If you can't afford to go out and have a night, then figure out a baby.
You can go to Starbucks.
Right. And just, and I know it seems super sappy and super cheesy, but even just getting in the car and driving and talking or parking someplace.
Go to the beach.
Having an ice cream or
yeah,
something.
Yeah, absolutely. You, anything that's says you're important to me and I focus on you. The problem, of course, when they're really little is you're terrified that whoever's taking care of them is not going to do. Okay, that's the other thing is you have to learn to find somebody you trust and say, look, I can be away from them, even if it's only for 2 hours.
Yeah.
Just do it. I highly recommend it. I wish I had done it more, but we survived and it's great.
Yeah. Let's take this time real quick to move into this article that you found because I find it really, really interesting. It's basically the idea of American homes now that there's, you got I like the way it puts this, grandparents in the attic, children in the basement. So in a sense, is that two generations or is it technically three
generations?
So three generations of people living in the same house.
Generationalism. You know what I'm saying.
It's easier to understand than say, I imagine.
This is in the New York Times. And what they have discovered is, for a variety of reasons, not just the Great Recession that everybody is recovering from, but that what's old is new again. You have parents, grandparents, and kids all living in the same house. And culturally, I kind of see some upside from that. I mean, it's always been sort of this American thing where you leave. Mm-hmm. Our kids were told from the moment they could record, you know, you're out of here. When you're 18, you're going to college and you got to have a plan. You're not coming back. And I don't know about you, but when I left at 17, I'm like, I'm out of here. Out. I didn't know my grandparents. They lived in other states. And so now what's happening is partly because of the Great Recession and partly because parents are living longer, grandparents, and maybe they don't have the money to go into a nursing home or some sort of care. And by the way, who wants to? Everybody wants to age in place. You want to die in your home if you can. They're moving in with their kids. And so you'll have three generations in one house. And one reason for that is money. What happened is it used to be that way, you know? And then...
Yeah, I love this part of it.
In the 40s, that started to just fall apart. And part of it was because, according to this article, Social Security came into being... So that grandma and grandpa had enough money that they could stay independent and live on their own. They didn't have to move in with you.
The idea that we talk about, like, when you're 18, you're out, right? Like, that's the kind of parents that we are. And then to have it also be that, I don't want to live with you a-holes either.
Right? Right. Well, no, I don't want to be a burden. This was my mother's thing. I don't want to be a burden.
But
I don't want to
honestly,
be a burden.
Honestly, here's the thing. I get not wanting to be a burden. I get, my dad says that even when he comes and stays for a week, and it's delightful when they come. You know, it's so much fun to visit with my parents and even my mother-in-law who's going through it because my father-in-law passed away a year ago. And so we're kind of in the throes of that a little bit. And she says, I don't want to be a burden, but it's not a burden.
No, I think that's such an American concept. And so one of the other reasons why this multi-generation cohabitation is happening is because we're increasingly a non-white country. And culturally speaking, it is much more common to have several generations under one roof. And it's not necessarily a financial decision. They say that I think it's even like 40% of Asian families have it, and with a higher median income. But
42% Asian, 40% Black.
And I think it's...
And the Asian, it says they have a higher median household income than the national average, which is basically pointing out that it is more cultural than it is economic.
Yes. And also it happens with Hispanic. I mean, and those families are close. My brother for a long time dated a woman who was from the Philippines. And every weekend, man, the whole family gets together. That's what you do. And they're such close. It's such a wonderful thing, which I think after you've been in this country two or three generations, you lose that because we're such a frontier, forward-moving, mobile, get out, go on, make your own way. And I think living, although, you know, we were all like, kids, you're never coming home. And the reason why millennials are still living at home is because they don't have the jobs or the ability to pay rent. But I like this idea, at least in theory, culturally for me, it is
so
foreign
to practice
to have everybody in one house. Look, my mom was the third parent. She lived 3 miles away. She came, she took care of the kids whenever we needed. She covered the gaps. It was fantastic. When she went on hospice, she was looking to try and find a board and care place because she didn't want to be a burden. If she couldn't stay in her own place, she wanted to go stay somewhere else. And I said to her, no, no, you're going to come live with me. And my husband's like, are you serious?
Hold on, let her do what she wants.
I thought, you know, we're talking at most 6 months, who knows, a year. But I thought, no, you will live here. She said, absolutely not. I don't want to be a burden. I don't want to put that on you. And I said, well, then let's see what we can do to so you can stay in your own condo. Again, 3 miles away from where I lived. So I would come stay with her at night and part of the day. We hired a caregiver to come in during the day to take care when I wasn't there. I tried to lasso in my siblings. My sister came down and would stay a little bit. My brothers, interestingly, crickets there,
really?
Though they were willing to
write a check
for no matter how big the check was.
Yeah.
She's going to have, you know, 5-star care. So we sort of made it work for 3 months. And it was to be able to, I was there the moment she passed, just her and me in the middle of the night in her own bed, in her own home. And I thought, that was a special gift that we were able to give her. I wouldn't have minded if she had been with me, but that takes work, you know. Yeah. If you're culturally not used to having your mom and dad live with you or your kids or to go live with your kids, I've hoped by my example, my children see the upside of being there and not saying, not this reaction we've always had where, well, you're going to go into board and care or you're going into a nursing home and I promise to come see you every weekend.
Yeah.
Now, some people have to do that and I don't want people to feel guilty.
No.
I don't want
to. Well, especially if you start bringing like dementia and Alzheimer's into it. Like,
well, if it gets beyond your ability to care.
Yeah, the level of care that requires.
Right.
My grandfather, when he went into hospice, my dad was there and he wasn't there when he passed. He was there at the house. He actually took a nap and just didn't wake up. My grandma went in to check on him.
Oh, that's a way to go.
Yeah. Yeah. It's funny. I think kind of what you're hitting on here is that they always say that, you know, mourning and closure is more for the living, obviously, than those that depart. And that my dad, I think the biggest thing for my dad, although I've never had a big conversation, I don't want to say sappy. He's a very emotional guy in the sense that he cares a lot, especially about family, but that the idea that when my grandfather passed away, he wanted to go scatter ashes like at the farm. My grandfather, that's not a thing my dad likes to do. So there was obviously it's his father, a very important person to him. But he had this great conversation with him, which was very transparent. I always found kind of weird is that he said he was just kind of sitting there hanging out. And my dad said, he goes, are you all right, Dad? And my grandpa was like, yeah, yeah, yeah. And my dad said, he goes, I felt compelled. He said, do you know what's happening? And he said, yeah, yeah, yeah. He goes, I'm dying. He said, are you okay with that? Is there anything I can do? He goes, oh, no, I'm fine. He goes, I'm ready to go. Just don't know how to do it yet. Is how he wow. said, which is, and it's funny to me because my dad and my grandfather are always very close, always very, very connected, but not connected as much as I would say my father and I are. You know what I mean? Where it's like, for him to have that honest a conversation with him and for it to be that kind of comfort, whether or not maybe my grandfather was scared out of his life. But to me, that's exactly what my dad needed to hear. So whether it's the truth or not, it always just kind of interested me.
Isn't it funny how hard it is to, when we get to be older in a way, maybe not for you, but I went through a whole time, hard to say, I love you to my parents. How hard to... I wish in hindsight I had made more of an effort to call them regularly because, man, I was out of the house. Yeah. I went out of my life. I moved out of state. My dad used to write me these little letters. He was an engineer in the aerospace industry, and he had this graph paper, and he would write in block capital letters, I love you, I miss you, here's some money, and it'd be like $5. Okay, so I'm telling you, I was living in Miami. $5 in the mid '80s maybe got you two Happy Meals. But
now, was this your family humor, or was this
He thought, you know, he thought like, here's five. Here's,
I'm helping you out.
Yeah, yeah. This will get you by.
Get yourself something nice, which is adorable.
But in my mind, I would be so touched. But I wish I had been more. I reciprocated that kind of love more and called and. And for those of you out there, not everybody has a great relationship, but believe me, your mother or father will not be sorry if you call them today and say, hey, how you doing? Yeah. That is never a call they don't want to take.
Yeah, I do that pretty regularly. Not so much with my real mom, like my parents are split up, but I at least talk to my mom. My stepmom does not like to talk on the phone, but my dad and I, we talk all the time.
Well, an email works too. I don't like to talk on the phone either.
I text. But. So what I do is my stepmom doesn't know how to text either, but I text her. Like, I'll just say, hey, thinking about you, love you, that kind of stuff. I give a lot of thank yous too. I think that's I've never had the real conversation, and I don't know that my parents would say, no, it's kind of annoying. I don't think it could be, but I send a lot of thank you. Like, anytime something happens in my life that I realize is a direct reflection on either the model that they set for me through their own behavior or the expectation that they put on me so that translated it into who I am, I send like a thanks.
Oh,
like,
nobody, thanks for doing this. Nobody doesn't want that.
Right?
Right. In fact,
if these shit whistles don't do that for me,
you can have zero expectations. I'm serious because my husband's going through this right now. How come he hasn't communicated? Well, have you reached out to him? Well, no, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
But the best form of communication we have a group text, the four of us. And I've kept the entire conversation, and I will to my dying day. It is hilarious where we're a very sarcastic group, and somebody will say something, and somebody will sound, if you sound proud for just 1 second, you know, you get piled on like, oh, aren't you something special? But these wonderful, for us, that to me is the equivalent of the phone call. I just love the group text.
That is great.
I'll save it forever. Yeah.
You got to do screenshots so those don't accidentally disappear.
Occasionally I do screenshots and I'll send it out again. Like, hey, remember that one?
Like on a Christmas card. That's funny.
Yes.
Let's do this before we keep going. I got to talk about my good friends at sunbasket.com. They have a special deal. You've heard me talk about it. $35 off your first order if you go to sunbasket.com/dadpodcast. And if you're new to the show and don't know what this is like, it's a food delivery service. So the way I look at it, but it's their thing is it's all organic. It's all sustainably sourced. You get pasture raised eggs, non-GMO fruits, vegetables, all the ingredients. You make all your own sauces and they've got a little portion. They give you a recipe book, right? For all of it. And in the bottom corner, they tell you the kids can. So you can make this stuff with your kids. So if you're sitting there going, there is no way my son or daughter will ever eat chicken tom kong gai soup, I can tell you that when they make
it last night,
right? When they make it, they will eat it.
This is a great idea to get the kids involved in the kitchen.
Yes. And the way that they structure, I've never done anything like this, but the way that they structure their recipe, and I'm a guy who loves to go online and find new recipes, is that it'll say, okay, do this. It breaks it down. And then at the end, when you read that, so you've gotten to the end and you've done it, it says, while this is happening, do this. And then it really is, it walks you through. Most of the meals take 30 minutes, maybe 45 tops, and they're delicious. The biggest thing I've enjoyed about it, though, is learning. Like I've learned, I made the chicken tom kha gai soup, and it was delightful. It had a coconut-like base in it.
It looks delicious.
Oh, my gosh, it's amazing. The other thing that I learned was, I don't know if couscous is always cauliflower, but I made a cauliflower couscous.
It is not. Couscous is a grain. It's not a cauliflower couscous.
Yeah, that's what it was. I got to go back and find it here. But and that's why I was like, oh, and because I have this special diet that I'm on.
Is it cauliflower in the couscous?
No, it's just it says here, let me, it used quotes. So it's a Moroccan salmon in cream sauce with cauliflower couscous in quotes. So what you do is you take a head of cauliflower and you run it through a food processor.
Right.
And just kind of give it like a rough chop, almost like I would kind of pebbly or whatever, that kind of a size, right? Maybe jelly bean size is a better description.
Yeah.
And you saute it with some olive oil and some garlic, and it's just a nice little bed. And it's for anybody who's not eating grains like my douchey Southern California butt is. It's perfect. It's absolutely perfect. So again, sunbasket.com/dadpodcast for $35 off your first order. And the other reason why I like this is because as the guy who made all the meals for the household, especially when I wasn't working full time, it's good to know that you're like 3-4 meals out of a week. I know that the kids are going to eat something healthy and I'm going to get them to try new stuff. The other thing I love is wilting greens. Like they give you these greens. And so you'll cook chicken in a pan and it says now set that aside. So you get all the flavors in there and then you get some kale or I did Swiss chard where you put it in there and it just kind of melts and it gets all the flavor in it and it cleans. This is what I love. It cleans the pan. Jane,
yes.
It cleans the pan.
Gets all the good stuff up.
Yeah. Sunbasket.com/dadpodcast. Let's see. What do we want to do now? Let's take another break and then let's do a little moment of the week. What do you say?
Okay.
All right.
You made them. You love them. And sometimes you want to choke the living shit out of them. But occasionally they give you that one sweet moment. This is that moment. Moment of the Week, brought to you by Dad Gear. All your child traveling needs packed into stylish, practical perfection. Designed by real dads for real dads and moms. Don't be the guy with a diaper purse. Be the man with a Dad Gear diaper backpack. Go to dadgear.com and use promo code DADPODCAST at checkout for 20% savings. Made in the USA.
All right, would you like to go first? Now, I know, Jane, your kids are gone, so you can either have a moment of the week, like something either cute, touch it. Like I always use this because sometimes the show becomes kind of me complaining, right, about being a dad. So this is our palate cleansing at the end. So it could be like, I would imagine if I'm in your shoes that there could be something that's like, oh, I did all right. Like, you know what I mean? Like what you're talking about your daughter telling you get a flu shot, that kind of stuff. Or if you want to hearken back to a memory when you got to hear the mom from the other
Well, I'll tell you something that happened this week.
Oh, love it.
So my son is married to a lovely woman in Japan, Hikaru, and they're having a sort of Western-style ceremony in April. They have had a civil ceremony. And she wants to collect some old photos of him. So that's been really fun to go through and see him when he was adorable and mom, that yeah. kind of thing. But I also sent her a video. The very first video I ever uploaded on YouTube, when he was about 12, he, in the middle of the night, took our home video camera without us knowing, went in the bathroom, and somehow managed to hold the camera facing him and pulled out his one remaining baby tooth. It was the bloodiest, goriest, gutsiest thing. He pulls it out.
And nobody
on
has
camera.
Any idea this is happening.
No, no, we're snoring away. And he's like holding it up, the tooth in front of the lens, puts it down. Then he's like putting the camera in his mouth so you can see the blood. And then he shows there's blood everywhere. I don't know if he told me about it, but I discovered it the next morning. I thought it was the most hysterical, yeah. off the wall, bizarre, really well shot, like strangely artistic. If you go on YouTube and search Jack Pulls Tooth from... I don't know, 11 years ago, you'll see it. So I said...
It's like the modern day Charlie bit me. It's like...
it was, yeah. Oh, it's crazy that he did it and that he... Like, no, not a sound. Not a sound. Just like yanking it out and all. So I sent this to her. I said, by the way, just so you have a little bit more background on the man you married, I said, he you will not... If you're putting something together, you won't want to include this, but I thought you'd get a kick out of it. I sent it just to her. 12 hours later, my son, who has not, you know, again, not Mr. Communication. Yeah. Can someone please tell me how Hikaru got a hold of the video of me pulling my tooth?
It's public. She Googled you.
And so for a moment, this is another thing that happens when your kids become adults. I was afraid my son was mad at me. Now, when they're kids, I don't care. But now he's an adult.
Yeah, that's
and is he angry with me that I did this? And that kind of got me like, oh, I don't want him angry. And then I shook out of it like, I'm his mother.
He can't be angry.
So I wrote him back. I said, she's part of the family. I thought she'd get a kick out of it. It's hilarious. And that was the end of that.
So you never found out if he was actually angry? I can't imagine why he would be.
Oh, because I think he's very much, I don't think he's thrilled with that video because I don't know why. He's a Marine.
Yeah.
It's totally, I think he, I don't know, but he may have been angry with me, but my point to myself was, I'm his mother.
Yeah.
She's my daughter-in-law. This is hysterical. She's part of the family now.
No, yeah, you're
Yeah, that's
right.
Your problem, not yeah. mine. So that was my moment
of
the
week. You don't start a marriage with secrets, son. You
yes.
Tip from mom.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. Meantime, she wrote back with all hearts and like, LOL, you know, that kind of stuff.
Well, that's the thing. It's so funny that you can't, and I think it's kind of a guy thing, maybe. It took me forever to realize, by forever, I mean, I'm a guy who married his high school sweetheart. We were seniors when we started dating, so I my perspective is a little skewed and lacks credibility, I imagine. But my point is that at a very young age, I was obsessed with finding a Mrs. Worsham. I was not interested in just banging around, finding like...
Wow.
When I was in high school, I had 4 or 5 girlfriends, and literally each one was closer to being the one.
That's still a lot of girlfriends for high school.
Yeah, it was
You got around.
I did all right. I did a lot of plays, so you know what I mean? I was desirable, I guess. But but anyway, I realized at a certain point, it was a couple girlfriends before I eventually met Natalie, was I was like, I used to try to be what they wanted me to be. And I remember thinking like, well, it's just easier because I always felt like I was the only kid that like some girlfriends even freaked out because I was moving a little too fast. Like I would, my mom even made a comment like, you don't have to bring home every bone you play with because, and I think she thought that I was using, well, I'm going to introduce you to my parents like as a way to get in her pants or something, which couldn't be further from the truth. It was in my mind, these are the checklists you make.
Right. We're going to marriage. I'm going to marry you eventually.
I was on an accelerated path to marriage in my mind. And so I had this moment where I go, you just got to be you. And I think that's kind of what you're saying. Like if she can't appreciate him at 12 years old pulling a tooth, then it's not, you know what I mean? And if she's not going to appreciate you sending the video, you know what I mean? You got to know what you're getting into. I had a girlfriend. The reason I bring this up, there's a girlfriend who my parents were out of town for prom. So she spent the night at my house.
Ooh.
And so,
They know?
Probably not.
Okay.
My parents, here's the thing. I would venture a guess that my parents probably assumed that stuff happened. Didn't want to think about it, what I would assume also. But they wouldn't condone it. You know what I mean? Like,
oh, I know exactly what you mean.
Like,
you will get at that age too, where it's like, gee, you know, at what point do you want your child to no longer be a virgin?
Right.
You know, there becomes an age where it's like, you have, right?
Right? I hope so.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But and where is that? It's like, to me, somewhere is like in college. Yeah, and so you don't want to think about it. Like, you don't want to think about it, but you know what's happening, and you're just kind of like, la-di-da.
My plan is for my 17-year-old son to hook up with a college girl. Like, but that's highly illegal.
What?
I just think, here's the thing.
I thought you were going to say hook up with a hooker, so I'm glad you didn't go there.
No, because that's something I've always wanted to try. Like, not that I'm not happy with my wife. I just want to know how different could it, because in my mind, I'm like, how different could it possibly be with a professional? Like, you know what I mean? But it's also one of those things, like, do you really want to know? Ray Romano has a joke about when he turned 15, he had to go get his colonoscopy, how he had to give himself an enema. And he goes, and I never done anything like this. He goes, and you're afraid that it'll hurt, but you're also a little afraid that, what if I like it?
Okay, let me just say, I've had a colonoscopy. No enema was required.
Nope.
So I think that was a special add-on for Ray.
Anyway, so point is.
Sorry.
No,
so diversions.
Don't apologize ever.
So a 17 college girl.
Because I think that sex is something, especially at that age, I think it's something very different for a young lady than it is for a young guy.
Oh, absolutely.
And I think, my goal is, obviously that's illegal for them to do that. But if it happened, I'd be like, fine, whatever.
Well, yeah.
Because I feel like a 22 or something year old girl is a little bit more able to handle like response. I don't, this sounds so condescending towards women, and that's not my point. My point is that I think when you're a teenager altogether, you have no idea, right? You have no idea. You can't really wrestle with it or completely understand and comprehend the responsibility of it.
Well, the impact.
Right.
The boys, it's a big deal. It's a big, 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 big deal.
So the only thing I can use to fight against that is my plan is to have a lot of conversations with my sons about being gentlemanly. Like that if I can at least raise them to be respectful and gentlemanly, then I will feel fine with whatever it is that, you know, they decide to do.
Absolutely.
But I think a nice 24-year-old college girl that's
good luck with
statutory
that.
Statutory rape.
Yeah, like, oh, here, I have a 17-year-old boy for you. Gee, thanks. Thank you.
He's going to need a really cool car. Yeah. I don't even know if that does it. Because kids don't even drive anymore now.
I know. Okay.
All right. Fun rabbit hole. But the so my moment of the week is, and it's funny because maybe if you listen to the show on a regular basis, you can tell when I'm going through what I like marriage. I think parenting has peaks and valleys. And honestly, when my parenting feels like it's at a peak, I get a little worried about the content for the show because a lot of it is born of me being, you know, kind of frustrated. And I am kind of in a sweet spot, I feel, of parenting where at 9 and 6, there's not a lot going on.
Perfect.
Yeah. It's a repetition. That's about the only bitch I have is that it's a lot of the same stuff. But overall, my kids are doing well in school, and, you know, and even though one of them is, he's a little bit behind, but at least we've got plans in place. Like, you know, all of that is working out socially. They're doing great.
They can get themselves breakfast.
Yes.
That was like a huge thing.
We're not there yet.
What?
I know.
Put out a box of Cheerios and then.
Well, yeah. But you got to understand, Jane, is that cereal for breakfast now, that's not okay, evidently.
Well.
My wife.
They'll have forage for themselves. Come on. 9 and 6. You can sleep in on a Saturday.
Well, my older son wants to take a cooking class with a friend, and we went out on a date night with his parents. And it was great because they were saying that their kid was saying he wants to take a cooking class with our son. And I go, wait a minute. But my son said your son was already taking the cooking class. He goes, no, there's a cooking class. But he's trying to get us to buy into the cooking class by saying, you know what I mean? Like, well so-and-so is going to go do it.
Yeah.
And I was like, really? That seems weird. Like,
how funny.
Isn't it great? This kid is diabolical.
All the kids are doing it.
Yeah, all the kids are taking cooking classes. And he's going to learn. And I said, well, my son says your kid can make waffles and egg whites. And like, well, yeah, we taught him that. He can do that on his own. Which I was like, he's like 8 or 9 years old making egg whites and waffles.
Oh, man.
And I joke with my son. I go, he goes, yeah, Mateo can make egg whites and waffles.
Watch his Chopped every other day. Keep an eye on Mateo.
I said, you know what, son? I like where your head's at. I go, but just so you know, you're going to regret this choice down the road. He goes, what? I go, you're going to become a permanent breakfast guy. That's your move.
But a chick magnet.
Oh, yeah, right?
Magnet.
If he can make his way around the around the kitchen, that's a win-win all around.
So your moment is?
My moment, I'm sorry.
No, I'm hosting the show now.
Yeah, I know, right? I need you, Jane. So my moment is everything is pretty chill. And so I get these that I think are the nice, you know, mama, that's the nice version of that, where we've had 2 3-day weekends in a row and we haven't had a lot going on the weekends. And so we just kind of hang out and we watched a little bit of the Justice League because it came out on digital and we hadn't seen it in the movie theaters. But it's the idea of all of us, the four of us, cuddling up on the couch and watching a TV show. And there's this added element, which is, We've been watching Alf and everything, but I just...
Oh, my gosh.
I know, right? And they love it. It's so weird. But my 9-year-old son last night, just having his head on my chest and just kind of running my fingers through his hair and just... it's calming. It's like a lavender aromatherapy for your soul. Like, it just... It's those moments that I think why we started doing Moment of the Week is because it made me feel like, I'm doing okay. Like, the kid wants to sit here. And I think at the beginning, too, he was even sitting on the other side of the couch, which is not, not usually, I'm very affectionate with my kids, but I don't insist on it usually. But so I said, why, you don't want to sit by your old man? Why are you going to sit all the way over there? Because my wife and the other son were on the other couch. And so he was like, no, I want to, but the dog's there. And so I just shoved the dog out. And so he came and he cuddled with me. And I still hug my dad and give him a kiss on the cheek. I don't know why I even stopped, but until I was well into my 20s, I kissed my dad on the lips. Like, we were very affectionate, very close. And I hope that stays for quite a while. When they become teenagers, I know I will force it.
There is no greater feeling than holding your child.
Even when they're adults.
Especially if you haven't seen him for a while.
Yeah.
By the way, that Tom Brady video where his son's kissing him on the lips, I thought that was absolutely perfect. Yeah, I thought it was wonderful.
Yeah.
I thought it was love.
Yes.
People like, creepy. Oh, that kiss is a little long. I'm like, wow.
Yeah. And it's funny because I never thought it was weird. I never, ever thought, and it's funny because I often joke too but I think it's part of a straight man's mentality that if I saw two dudes kissing, like, there's a part of me, it's like, I'm happy that they're, like, I went to my friend who's gay, he got married, and I was so happy for him, right? I cried like a baby, even when they're, but if, But there's something about watching two dudes kiss that I'm like, oh boy, not for me. Not my cup of tea kind of a thing.
No, but in other cultures, heterosexual men kiss on the lips. You know,
but that's my point is that even for me to be wired that way.
And to think that was okay with Tom Brady and his son, because it's his son.
And to kiss my dad with a full-blown beard until I was well in my 20s. Yeah, like, no, you know what I mean? Not that I need to be the bar by which all things are measured by any means, but.
No, there's no greater. The touch, holding your child close to you, feeling them relax into your body.
You miss,
Oh, terribly.
The idea of them coming to visit now, like, is just.
Different.
Holidays.
I love the first 24 hours.
Really? Okay.
I love it. Oh, they're coming home. Oh, they're here. They're all in here. I remember, I'll think at night, and I haven't had both of them at home at the same time in a long time. Everyone I would kill for is under this roof tonight. Thank you, God, that we're all together. And then after about 24, 36 hours, like the bathroom's a mess and, you know, they're sitting around and what are we, you know, doing today and all that. And it happens and you'll find eventually you're like, man, I want my house back.
Yeah.
It was great seeing you. I love you. Okay.
Move on.
Yeah.
Time to get out.
Out.
This isn't a multi-generational house.
Yeah, right. Not in this house.
How stoked are you? I know we got to wrap up, but I'm just curious. How stoked are you for grandkids?
Yes and no, because then you can recreate that touch and that holding and you get to have a whole new relationship and I'll be so much smarter now and more fun and I'll get on the ground and play and we'll bake cookies in the kitchen and do all the things I wish I'd taken the time to do with my kids. At the same time, you know, if he's half a world away, I'll have to make a real concerted effort to open a relationship. I think they want to come back to California, hopefully. And I also need to make sure that I set aside the time. You know, I've been go. But man, I want to be like my mom. When grandkids come, I want to be there. I want to fill the gap. I want to be a major part of their lives.
See, I'm going to say this to you. Not that you need any advice from me. But I think that you are too rough on yourself as far as the things that you made time for and all that stuff. I think if you were to sit down with your kids and ask them, I think that they would have a very different perspective than what you have of yourself. Because here's what my dad has said to me about grandkids. He said, it is all of the fun of parenting with zero responsibility.
Right.
And that's why it is awesome. Is that because I have that. I want just as much as anybody. Like, I'm building a freaking fort in the backyard.
Best dad ever.
No, but not best dad. Because here's the thing. There's two elements. To say that I'm doing that entirely for my kids, yes, I'm going to be honest. 80% of it is because I think it'll be fun for my kids. And I'll get a charge out of watching them screw around. Am I afraid they're going to break a bone? Absolutely. But do I think that'll be good for them a little bit? Yes.
They'll live.
Why am I interviewing myself? Not sure.
I know that whole, I'm going to ask myself a question. What do you think about that? I think it's an old routine.
But there is a little bit of it that I want to do that mostly because being a good dad, because I had, I think, one of the best. So being a good dad to those boys is so important to me. But there's no way they're going to enjoy it like as much as. I guess here's the thing. They're going to probably come out here for 20, 30 minutes, or maybe it'll last a week.
Oh, you are wrong.
I'm going to spend months on this
thing.
I'm
telling you, my dad, it's so funny. My dad built a fort in the backyard for us. And some of my best memories were playing in and around that fort over a span of maybe 5 years where we used it. It's great. You have your friends over. Yeah. You play this, that, and the other. You go up top and hang out on the top and feel like you're, oh, my God, I'm 100 feet off the ground. No, and I think that while I was a working mom and career and this, that, and the other, I chose a few really big projects to do with the kids that were fun. I produced a whole, we turned for their Sunday school. I'm getting off topic.
That's all right. It's a podcast.
I turned the Book of Genesis into a newscast.
Oh, this, yes.
And I had the Sunday school class play the reporters, and my kids were anchors, and people would go out and they'd be interviewing Adam and Eve and all this kind of stuff. And we made a video out of it that is a great memory for them. So like I chose a few big projects where when they look back on their life, they'll say, oh yeah, my mom did that.
My dad, and I think maybe I shared this with you last time you were here, because my dad pointed out to me recently, and this is a guy who shifted careers because I didn't want to be on the road away from my kids all the time. He goes, when you were 8 years old, how much do you think I was home? I said, what do you mean? He goes, out of the weeks of the month. And I knew he traveled for work. So I was like, I don't know, like at least how much do you think I was gone? I said, 1, maybe 2 weeks. He goes, I was gone 3 to 4 weeks every month the entire time you were 7 and 8 years old.
Wow.
Because he was traveling for work.
Yeah.
I had zero recollection. And which his point was, which I think is a strong one, is that it's not about the quantity of the time. It is the quality of the time that you have.
Wow.
Because never, I mean it never. And my dad, by anybody else's, if you hear stories about me, say, with a smile on my face, but you hear the words that come out of my mouth about my father's interactions with me, you would feel bad or that he was a horrible person. But never once. Never once did I think that dad, that guy didn't love me or that I wasn't an important part of his life. He created this great balance where I was numero uno, but I never felt entitled to be numero uno. And I hope I'm doing a good enough job with that. Because
that's
a
perfect way to put it.
Yeah, I never felt like, he never made me feel like I was the most important thing to him. But it's just such a weird mixture to also know that if I needed something, he was there. He always, always, never, never, ever. I was very lucky. Very lucky, Jane. And I think your kids are, too, is what my whole point of that is.
Thank you.
All right. So that's our show. You can send me an email to show@thedadpodcast.com. But the big thing you need to do is follow Miss Jane Wells at Jane Wells on Twitter. The other thing you need to do is head on over to iTunes or wherever you go to get your podcasts and subscribe to Jane Wells's podcast, Strange Business.
Strange Success. Strange Success.
Why did
I don't know, but it's Strange Success.
I'm so sorry.
Oh, no, that's all right.
So Strange Success, then. My favorite episodes, you've got, I think now you're up to what, 9 or 10?
There will be 8 in the season. We've got 6 out so far.
Okay. So I'm 2 behind, but I love the MyPillow story.
Yeah, where he invented that while he was on crack.
Yeah. One of the most compelling stories. If you like entrepreneurial stories and you just think it's fun to hear about, this is what I think is great about it. I'm going to blow some sunshine, but I mean it. It's not sunshine up your ass, but it's sincere, is that what's great about it is you find these not only compelling characters and interesting stories, but it's a nice thing about the American entrepreneurial spirit,
yes.
I think, which is what is I find so compelling is that, sure, you have the guys who made the Squatty Potty, right? That's where we start, and that's great, and it's all fun and everything. But then you have this guy like MyPillow, where he's like, he's an addict, and he's building this business, and the things he does for his employees.
He's crazy good. Mike Lindell, you've seen the ads on TV, the infomercials. Yeah, $260 million in sales.
But to imagine a guy who is just that cheesy, as seen on TV guy, right?
Yeah.
And to hear, like, you got to listen to this episode because there's no way I could do it justice here.
Yeah, the drug dealers did an intervention because he was the only guy, the only crack addict they knew who had success. You got to listen to it. Strange Success.
And the fact that he found out an employee, like, was having a hard time getting over, so he buys the employee a car.
Yeah.
Like, and if you never had, you got to listen. and then the best characters I think you've had so far are the Guac Lock ladies.
Oh, you like them?
Oh,
aren't they hilarious?
Gosh.
Thank you.
Oh, my gosh.
Filthy rich women.
Yes, I know. That's
who decide we're bored. We're empty nesters. Let's solve the problem of brown guacamole.
So
they had no idea what they were doing.
It's so great.
I mean, that's great. But my favorite so far is Hangover Heaven.
It's I haven't gotten that one yet.
The Vegas doctor, the doctor in Las Vegas, who an entrepreneur from the get go, like, how can I make money, comes up with a 45-minute hangover cure. He drives around in a refurbished Christian gospel rock band bus where he hangs IVs from. And he'll come up to your hotel room in the casinos. I was staying at the Wynn, and I tied one on with company permission. I tied one on, and I submitted myself to the cure. And it is freaking amazing.
Really? So you go full, like,
oh yeah,
and no hangover.
So they only work during the day. They don't come to your room while you got to have a hangover, and it's over for $200. So it's not cheap. It's not for 21-year-old bachelor party guys. And so I woke up. I don't even remember going to bed. In fact, I think I threw up, but there was no evidence. I was so intentionally tied one on with the whole story about how CNBC had to get permission to allow me to get drunk. And then I stumbled down to his van, and 45 minutes later, I could have run a marathon.
Really?
It was.
See, this is not only why I love Jane, but it's why you should definitely check out, again, Strange Success, a podcast available wherever you get it, wherever you get your podcasts. I listen to it via the podcast app on my iPhone. So definitely check that out. Don't forget Sunbaskets. Go to sunbaskets.com/dadpodcast for $35 off your first order. And I think that's it. All the social media handles are in the... Oh, if you want to check me out on Instagram, @dadpodcast on Instagram, and also facebook.com/dadpodcast, I'm doing videos. So I'm only working on the weekend.
Wait, Where? There's no camera in here.
No, I do a video of the fort building. So you can hear about how I broke my contractor grade trenching shovel, digging up the posts that are in there. And so far, it's been pretty uneventful.
That was a good day.
Yeah, yeah. So you can see the pictures, and then there's a video of where I walk you through what I'm doing, and you can make fun of me and all of that stuff. But again, Facebook.com/DadPodcast or on Instagram @DadPodcast. On behalf of Jane Wells, this is Justin Worship saying, hug your kids, hump your loved one, and stay frosty, my friends.